Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. I want to spend the bulk of the program today talking about the political divide in this country, largely created by the political left as it attempts to exploit this and gain control over us. These attempts are substantially aided by the left's control of the mainstream media, academia, social institutions such as the Ford Foundation, and even many of our largest corporations. But first, let's have an update on the coronavirus pandemic. Despite its bombarding the airwaves with endless scare propaganda about the pandemic, the mainstream media the mainstream Marxist media, as Dr. Steve Turley refers to them, has been carrying on with all this scare stuff about how this huge increase in infections and the rate of infection is soaring. But they're not telling you about the death rates, which have been dropping steadily. And according to the CDC, as I understand it, we're close to being below what they consider the threshold for a pandemic. Or an epidemic, I believe, even. So while it's true that in large part due to massive testing efforts here in the U.S. and other parts of the world, the infection rates are reported as rising. But we have been seeing a fall in the death rates from COVID-19, as the coronavirus is also called. In fact, the death rates are falling so much that this disease is close to becoming declassified as an epidemic and pandemic, as I understand it. And while there may be spikes here and there in coming weeks due to increased infections amid a return to normalcy, where that's being allowed, there is evidence that we have largely passed the peak of deaths in this country. Another thing to keep in mind is that for some 80% of those infected, the symptoms of coronavirus are mild or non-existent. The real danger of dying from coronavirus is for those among us with compromised immune systems and underlying health conditions. In the country, in the county where I live, for example, there were, as of yesterday when I checked, a little over 400 deaths from COVID-19, with some 20,000 total positive cases confirmed by increased testing. This is in a county with 3.2 million residents, not counting illegal aliens. And of those coronavirus deaths, about half were in skilled nursing facilities such as nursing homes. The bulk of the rest were among the county's jail inmates and transient homeless people. All of these groups are notorious for having suppressed immune systems. For this, authorities are shutting down all restaurants, bars, clubs, sporting events, conventions, and the like, and doing enormous economic damage. I understand that with increased economic activity, there will be increased infection rates. There does seem to be a vaccine on the rise, but it may turn out to be like the flu and the colds, where it works in some cases, it doesn't work in others. It may help in some, may not help so much with other people. Again, what we need to do is protect the vulnerable and let the rest of us get on with our lives. Let's listen to some remarks made by radio host Mark Levin on his radio program July 9 about the efforts of the left to use the pandemic to destroy the U.S. economy and blame President Trump. Please play soundbite one.
You'll notice the news reports will not talk about the mortality rate from this virus right now. They won't do it. Not in absolute numbers, not in percentages. All you'll get is the overall number. You go to the Drudge Report, all he does there is aggregate the numbers from the very beginning. So you have no idea if the death rate's going down. And yet, if you go to the CDC site, they have the charts. I'm surprised he doesn't put it on red, blaring red, slap it up there on his foot. No. We got to get Trump. He's the David Brock of websites. Well, I went on there. A friend of mine alerted me to this. And I'm looking at this. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Table 1, deaths involving corona disease, 2019, COVID-19. And they have a whole line there, week ending date in which the death occurred, and then the next category is all deaths involving COVID-19. Now, I admit it's a week old, but so be it. When you go all the way down the list, Mr. Producer, the week ending July 4th, 2020, all deaths involving COVID-19, you know how many, Mr. Producer? 71. 71. Did I say 71? He did say 71. Now you know why this is being censored by the Drudge Report, by Mediaite, by Media Matters. Now you know why this is being censored by newsrooms across cable TV, network TV. It's the chart. I'm looking right at the chart. It's not my chart. It's their chart. It's the government's chart. National Center for Health Statistics. Week ending date in which the death occurred, July 4, 2020. All deaths involving COVID-19, 71. Ladies and gentlemen, should we be celebrating this? Should we be happy about this? Shouldn't this be the headline on the Drudge Report and Mediaite? Shouldn't this be the headline on the newsrooms on cable TV? They have all these charts up there, but they don't have this one. Instead, the overall number of deaths? And they don't even break that down. From what? Are we sure it was COVID-19? That's all explained on the site, too. It's very interesting. It's fascinating, as a matter of fact, that site. So I know this is upsetting the Drudge Report, the Democrats, Biden, the fascistic governors and all. They want to look at the infection rate. They want to look at the positive tests. The fact that we even have tests, you can thank the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States who coordinated with the private sector to get these tests. Fauci didn't have any tests. 50 years in the government. The CDC had tests, but they were defective. So in 60 to 90 days, now we're testing millions. Millions and millions. Look at this. More people had it than we thought. That was predictable. I said so months ago. You do more tests, you find more infections. Wow, think about that. And so all they talk about is the positive tests, the positive tests, the positive tests. So the president the other week says, maybe we should take less tests. Dr. Fauci says, let's not look at the mortality rate. That doesn't tell us anything. This guy, may I say this respectfully, is becoming a quack. Did I say quack? I said quack. Don't wear masks. Now in some cities, you better wear a mask. The idiot governor of New Jersey says, we're going to fine you $1,000. The idiot governor of Michigan, we'll fine you $500. The idiot mayor, DeCamio of New York. Hey, as long as you're promoting a Black Lives Matter, do what you want. Wear, don't wear. Protest is America. You go to a funeral, you go to church or synagogue, then we're going to slap you hard. You see, this is how Marxism works. So the president says, maybe we should take less tests. Oh, my God. Can you believe that?
Now, sadly, as Mark Levin just noted, the Drudge Report, which was long a source of great information for the political right, has been taken over by the left. We don't know why or how, but it has been in recent months, maybe the last year or so, and is now largely a voice for the political left. So you do no longer get much good information from the Drudge Report. The other thing, too, I thought you mentioned was interesting. You can't go to church. In my county, the churches are all still closed. But you can have a demonstration and maybe a riot with Black Lives Matter and Antifa. No problem. Nobody will stop that. Oh, look, we're protesting social justice or lack of it. So I thought it was ironic that a couple of weeks ago I saw some Black Lives Matter spokesman saying they were canceling one of their demonstrations because they discovered an increase in COVID-19 infections among the group that was protesting for them during the last demonstration there. But it doesn't seem to be slowing them down too much. All right, let's move on to the discussion of the ongoing protests and riots occurring across the nation over the past few weeks. Many of you have been asking yourselves, is this all the result of the death of an American of African descent, George Floyd, at the hands of a white police officer, Derek Chauvin, who, by the way, has been charged with Floyd's murder in Minneapolis over the Memorial Day weekend? Of course not. Whatever the reason or reasons for Chauvin's actions that led to Floyd's death, it has served as the perfect excuse by radical leftists to engage in widespread and recurring protests and rioting around the country since George Floyd died. And it's gone way beyond that. You can, if you look at these people and you need to see what's going on, you know, it really doesn't have a lot to do with systemic racism and all this other stuff they're carrying on about. These are clearly well-funded, carefully planned and orchestrated actions by the left to create racial hatred and even civil war. And thus, they hope, lead to the left's takeover of the country. Let's hear Infowars.com's Alex Jones lay out his case for his contention that the left is attempting to start a civil war, aided by millions and millions of dollars being funneled to the left by globalist billionaires who are seeking a world government with U.S. and other nations subjugated to their vision of the so-called New World Order. You hear that mentioned a lot among these people. Please play soundbite 2.
It's now official. Establishment mouthpieces like CNN and the New York Times say America is in a leftist revolution and the American flag and George Washington are coming down. America is in a civil war. Now, who told me about that before? Turns out the mainstream media has memorialized all the detailed warnings I've given in the last 3.5 years, and we're about to lay them out. What is a globalist billionaire? Well, they're just that. They're a billionaire that doesn't believe in the nation state and that believes in a corporate authoritarian world government. You've seen George Soros and a whole constellation of these guys in the last 3.5 years since Trump got elected, openly spending hundreds of millions of dollars a month trying to kick off revolution. And we've written articles about it. We've done video reports. We've had guests on that were inside these organizations. Project Veritas has got an undercover video. This is going on. But it's really hilarious in a sick way if you go back starting about 3 years ago. All the different mainstream media articles in major publications, Washington Post, New York Times, you name it, saying Alex Jones is completely insane. He claims the left wants to pull down the American flag and George Washington. He claims that they want to cancel July 4th. He claims that they're going to go out and start burning and pillaging and trying to create a chain reaction of looting that will drive President Trump from office. Ha ha ha. And, oh, they made comedy videos about it. There was big memes on Reddit and on Twitter about it. Here's some of those headlines and articles the last few years that memorialize the videos and articles and reports that we put out detailing this. And now you wake up in July 2020 and it's all here. They were beta testing it before, as I said they were, to then roll it out with a big push later. This is the big push. Here's a big story out of the Washington Post a few years ago. A short history of Alex Jones claiming that the left is about to start a civil war. December 2017, Alex Jones and Roger Stone train for the next civil war. Let's see a clip from that.
Up against the wall, commies.
Hold it.
October 2017, Ted Nugent joins Alex Jones. The left is trying to start a civil war. I mean, that's what they said they were doing with billionaires funding them. September 2017, breaking, left openly planning civil war. And they mock my report, but don't show you the report where we show them saying it with billionaire funding. Second Civil War, how a wild conspiracy theory became a July 4th Twitter meme and how they made fun of me and said I was crazy. They were saying 2 years ago they were planning to have a civil war on July 4th and tear down the statues and burn things down and burn down the White House and drive Trump from office. I mean, that was in the news. But, oh, Jones is crazy. No such thing is happening. Now it's all memorialized and all over the country. In blue states and blue cities, July 4th has been canceled, and we're told the American flag should be taken down, and everybody sucks, and the cities are burning. Alex Jones said Democrats would start the next civil war on July 4th, and Twitter did what Twitter does best, made fun of us. Here's another one. Civil War post by right-wing radio host roundly mocked on Twitter, ABC News. So this is just another example of how you get not just tomorrow's news today, but next year's news today at InfoWars. Yes, I know it sounds radical and crazy to say that there are secret pedophile rings with thousands of kidnapped children blackmailing thousands of prominent individuals. It's all public now. I was told this by high-level patriots in the FBI 25 years ago. I didn't just come up with that. Of course it was real. I think I'm just going to make that up. I exposed the whole world government plan, how they'd used a canned virus to bring in a police state. We've laid it all out because I study what the New World Order itself says. I didn't look into a crystal ball and imagine everything that's happening and them trying to cancel 4th of July now and calling it a revolution day to overthrow the country. They said they were going to do it. And on hundreds of major stories, we're dead on. And people keep asking, how are you dead on? Because when they're building the revolution and preparing it, they don't want people to really know about it. They just want it to be in their circles. They didn't want a Paul Revere to warn years before, so they criticized it. But now that they're going fully operational, you see, they're more than happy to admit it's a revolution, it's an overthrow. So ask yourselves, are you going to sit there idly by while they overthrow the country and bankrupt it and destroy our futures? Or are you going to stand up and speak out and demand that these chicken-necked politicians and these cowardly corporations stop lining up to virtue signal the destruction of our republic? We've got a really good shot at getting Trump reelected and down the road defeating the New World Order. But ladies and gentlemen, it's really a fight between good and evil, and it's a fight that goes on in our hearts and our souls. And if we don't find God again and get back to being decent people and get back to being politically involved and start standing up to evil, there's no level of appeasement that will ever stop them. These globalists and their minions want everything because they're corrupt and they're bad news. So remember what July 4th really all about and thank your lucky stars you were born in this country, because it's not perfect. But compared to other nations, we have incredible freedom to seek your dreams, incredible freedom to live how you want. So let's save the republic while there's still time, because the alternative is absolute enslavement and tyranny. Thank you all. God bless. Have a great 4th of July.
That was from Jones' radio program, July 3. Remember, as he's been saying, Alex Jones has for years been talking about pedophile networks among the political and business elites. And what do we see unfolding today? The Jeffrey Epstein pedophile network scandal. Jeffrey Epstein, of course, conveniently committed suicide, allegedly, once he was taken into custody. Now we have his supposed co-conspirator in all this, Ghislaine Maxwell, in custody. Hopefully she will survive to be able to testify, and we will find out more about some of our leaders who've been involved in this. And since the left is whipping up hysteria over slavery these days, here's audio from a video clip on InfoWarsBand.video posted on July 4, titled "A History of Enslavement and the Land of the Free," with InfoWars commentator Greg Reese. Play sound by three, please.
Since Sumer and Babylon, slavery has been a foundational part of the human story. In ancient Greece, slaves were considered part of the natural order. Aristotle wrote, "For that some should rule and others be ruled is a thing not only necessary, but expedient. From the hour of their birth, some are marked out for subjugation, others for rule." During the Roman Empire, slavery was widespread. And when Rome fell, dynasties of Arabs along the Mediterranean created a new slave trade. The Prophet Muhammad was a slave trader, and the teachings of Islam support slavery. For all of recorded history, you will find humanity enslaved, mostly to ruling class families and their vassals. African slaves first arrived in America in 1619, and by 1688, the abolitionist movement was born within the Protestant Christian group known as the Quakers. The Quakers believed that each individual had a soul, and thereby every individual should be free. Quaker William Penn's Charter of Privileges was an early prototype for the Bill of Rights, and it was Quaker philosophy that inspired inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the Declaration of Independence. These documents were designed to liberate the individual from a ruling class system. It was the beginning of the abolition movement, and black slaves immediately began petitioning legislators demanding their freedom. By 1804, there were 11 free states and 11 slave states, splitting the North and the South against each other. It was during this struggle between the status quo and individual freedom that America's two current political parties were formed. By the dawn of the Civil War, there was Lincoln's anti-slavery Republican Party versus the pro-slavery Democratic Party. In 1862, Lincoln issues his Emancipation Proclamation, followed by the 13th and 14th Amendments. The Democratic Party remained strongly opposed. They even went on to create the Ku Klux Klan as the party's military arm. Hiding behind masks, the KKK used violence, intimidation, and murder to help the Democratic Party gain political power. In 1868, the first presidential election since the abolition of slavery, the slogan for the Democratic Party was, "This is a white man's country, let white men rule." Today, Africa has the highest rate of slavery in world history. And so does the world. An estimated 40.3 million people are enslaved, 25% of which are children. And while both parties in America have become corrupted, it is still the Democratic Party that fights against individual freedom and pushes the people towards reliance upon a bigger, more powerful government. America is not perfect. The ruling class still thrives. But our Constitution and Bill of Rights have given the people more individual freedom than anything else in all of recorded history. And those who seek to take it away do so without any idea of what comes next. If we cannot preserve the extraordinary and unprecedented freedoms that we were given at birth, do we even deserve to be free? For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
As he pointed out, slavery existed not just in the West, but the world over since the dawn of human civilization. I'm not an expert on U.S. history or the history of the Civil War era, but I've read and I understand it's well established that thousands of blacks supported the Confederacy during the Civil War with military service or money or other resources during that period. Some of these people, as I understand it, were slaves promised freedom if the South won. Some were freed slaves who themselves owned slaves and saw it being in their best interest to support the South during this conflict. My point in bringing this up is we are being pushed to judge people who lived centuries or even thousands of years ago according to a current hate-filled, hysterical Marxist mindset of today in order to intimidate people into submission to Marxist thinking. I'll have more to say about Marxism's founder, Karl Marx, a little later in the program. Right now, let's listen to another discussion of recent events from The New American, that is TNA.com. It's a video posted recently on their website and features two of their commentators, Dr. Duke Pesta and Alex Newman, and is titled, "What's Really Behind the Riots?" Play soundbite four, please.
I'm Dr. Duke with The New American and joined today by our international correspondent, Alex Newman. Alex, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Duke. Great to be with you.
Well, in the week after the 4th of July, the 6th of July to be precise, a new edition of The New American magazine is released, and you and I both have articles in that magazine. So let us talk about your cover story and my secondary story. Let's talk about your story, which is what is really going on? Who is really behind the rioting in the American public sphere right now? Who are the players who are making this happen?
Yeah, and that's really the main focus of my story. And so what I do is I zero in on the main organizations on the ground that are fomenting the unrest, that are stirring up riots and looting and violence, and then also the organizations and the individuals who are funding that. And so we focus in particular on three organizations on the ground primarily, and we talk about some of the others involved too, but you have Antifa, which President Trump has declared a terrorist organization. You have Black Lives Matter, which is a Marxist organization, and you know, you don't have to dig very deep to find that. You just go to their website. They'll proudly tell you. In fact, they say it in interviews, right? And then the last one is called the Sunrise Movement, which is a grassroots organization, supposedly, of young people. They're out there recruiting children in government schools to come serve as useful, brainwashed idiots, to kind of serve as a battering ram in the breaking down of our civilization. And then, you know, beyond that, you know, we look at some of the information we have on them. For example, the Sunrise Movements, they were planning this these riots in Minnesota long before George Floyd was killed. In fact, they were doing webinars, they were plotting this defund the police movement. One of their big agenda items is the Green New Deal. So we expose all that. And then we get into where is the money coming from? And, you know, it's not surprising. It's also not hard to figure out. The documents, the data is all out there. It is racist billionaires, almost without exception, right? The largest funder of the Sunrise Movement, for example, is the Rockefeller Family Foundation. Now, the Rockefellers, now interesting, they're funding anti-racist protests. They were some of the biggest financiers of racism throughout the 20th century. They were funding Nazi racial pseudoscience quackery. They were funding Joseph Mengele before he started his experiments on children in Auschwitz. They were funding eugenics. They were funding all this kind of racial pseudoscience, claiming that, you know, whites were superior. So the idea that they now suddenly grew a conscience and now they're trying to fight racism is ludicrous. And also they made all their money in oil, which is funny that they're funding the Sunrise Movement, which one of their big claims to fame is fighting for the Green New Deal and to transform the economy to stop fossil fuels. Then you have Soros obviously funding the Black Lives Matter movement, and you have, you know, this weird convergence of communist groups and super capitalists funding them. And it doesn't make sense on the surface. So what we do in the article is explain to you this has been going on for a long time. It's not new. And there are very specific objectives that they're pursuing, Duke.
So this is a complicated subject. And I know that probably the average TNA reader is up to speed on some of these issues, but not maybe the general reader. So the Black Lives Matter, if you go to their own website, I mean, this is not complicated. They're talking about breaking apart the nuclear family. They want to unmake gender norms. They want to get rid of male and female. They are openly and avowedly Marxist. They make it very clear that what they want to do is bring down Trump, they say. They want to replace the government in America with a socialist Marxist government. So that's obvious, and you can find that pretty easily. Antifa, I think, is all of those things without even pretending to be something else, right? I mean, we've already figured out that Antifa is not anti-fascist, that they are using the tools of fascism to do exactly what Black Lives Matter wants to do. No, neither of those things are surprising, although it surprises me that Antifa, the Trump administration, took some heat for branding them a terrorist organization, but they are. But given the same objectives and aims of Black Lives Matter, almost the same profile, how do you make one a terrorist organization and not the other one?
That's a very good question, and my guess is politics was probably involved more than anything. But, you know, I really do think it's time for law enforcement, for prosecutors, for state attorneys general to start investigating these things. What we have here is very clearly subversion. This is an effort to overthrow our system of government and replace it with a totalitarian new system of government. And to be clear, there are ways to change the system. If people are unhappy with the system, we have legal, lawful means of doing so. It includes voting. It includes constitutional amendments. It includes rewriting the Constitution if that's what people want to do. We have an Article 5 process. I think it's a terrible idea, but it is possible. When you get into the realm of trying to violently overthrow the system, using violence and destruction of property and killing to try to advance your political objectives, there's a very specific name for that. It's called terrorism. It's called subversion. It's called revolution. And these people need to be prosecuted. But they have friends in high places. And so what we're seeing here, actually, Duke, is the use of a very old communist strategy. It actually helped enslave multiple nations. It was pioneered in Czechoslovakia, which managed to fall under communist slavery without a shot being fired. Very similar thing to what we're seeing now. So you have the pressure from below, which is the rioters, the looters, the protesters, funded by Soros, funded by Rockefeller, funded by the Ford Foundation, and, you know, all these mega billionaire foundations and individuals. And then you have the pressure from above. So you have actual communists and Marxists within the UN saying, oh, look at the protesters. We need fundamental reform of America. We need to address the root causes of socioeconomic inequality. You know, fancy ways of saying you need communism in America. Then you have the Democrats in Congress, many of them, you know, taking a knee and putting on this, you know, this African scarf that ironically comes from the Ashanti tribe, which was known for, among other things, selling fellow Africans into slavery. So it's a very carefully orchestrated operation with a goal of taking down our nation, rewriting and completely undermining our history, our understanding of ourselves, and ultimately smashing individual liberty and moving us toward this global system that they're trying to bring in.
Well, it's really interesting when you think about it. I hope the people watching recognize that this is not something that's just emanated out of the last couple of years. And it even precedes Trump by decades, what they've been trying to do. But I just start with the election of Donald Trump. This coup, and I think you're right for calling it a coup, it is treason. It is an attempt to overthrow a sitting government. It started with the election in earnest of Donald Trump. Not for one second at any time during the last 4 years has the American left or even the Democrat Party accepted the lawful election of Donald Trump. And you think about before there were riots in the streets. You had this fake impeachment. You had this nothing burger Russian collusion story. You had all of the fake racial outrage, things that Trump never said. There's good people on both sides. It has been an insurrection carried out and abetted by the media, the mainstream media, to unmake this president from the moment he was elected. Never once have the Democrats accepted that this was a legitimate election or that he was a legitimate president. And more importantly, that those of us who reject the progressive new wave, that we have the right to be represented by politicians who do not see things the way they do.
That's exactly right, Duke. That's exactly right. And so this is, you know, to be clear, this is illegal. This is unlawful. This is criminal. This is a national security threat. And to build on all of that, just very, very recently, we released an interview with Josiah Cruz. She's a Venezuelan woman who's running for Congress in Atlanta, who has probably one of the most in-depth understandings of what's going on in Latin America and how that translates into America. And what she explained, and we actually show the proof, the videos of these people talking about these things, there's a network of Latin American communist regimes, socialist dictatorships, including the Venezuelans, the Bolivians, the Cubans, the Nicaraguans, and on and on and on, who are actually orchestrating a war on America. They infiltrated their agents into the United States, and they're bragging about this in public, right? It's amazing that our media doesn't pick up on this. Oh, wait, no, it's not. But you would think our intelligence agencies, our military, would at least be doing something about this. Total silence. And so what we're seeing here is an orchestrated, very well-planned, coordinated effort. It's a war on the United States. It's designed to completely and utterly annihilate our system of government, our free political institutions. And as long as we don't understand that we're in a war, as long as you have a big part of the population running around thinking this is about racial justice or police brutality or something like that, we are going to be defeated in a way that I think is going to be absolutely catastrophic. So we need to be clear here. This is a war against us, against the United States, against our freedom. This is not about police. And, you know, the communists themselves say this. The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. And we're seeing that now. It's not about George Floyd. It's not about police brutality. It's not about black. If it was about Black Lives Matter, they'd be protesting at Planned Parenthood, you know, slaughtering thousands of unborn black babies every day, founded by a eugenicist who wanted to disappear black people from the gene pool. It's not about black lives. It's about overthrowing our system and reducing us to serfdom, and we've got to treat it as such.
Pay attention. The revolutionaries went from protesting police to protesting statues of Confederate soldiers in 2 weeks, Confederate soldiers, to protesting the statues of our founding fathers, and even now abolitionists, to now opposing literally the 4th of July, which is being condemned even as we speak, the Independence Day, and the American flag, and Mount Rushmore. So this isn't going to stop anytime soon. It's going to get a lot worse. Alex, thanks for your time today.
Speaking of Marxism, that is communism, the most extreme form of socialism, and totalitarianism in general, I was surprised to learn that Karl Marx was born into a well-off middle-class family in Germany, was university educated, but never worked to make a living for himself and his family. I mean, just for the purpose of making money, as I understand it, preferring instead to live mostly off an allowance until his mother cut him off from it, an inheritance, donations and gifts from supporters, and finally, an annuity paid for by his good friend, co-author, and longtime supporter, Friedrich Engels, who was himself born into a wealthy family. Engels eventually took a job in a factory that his father co-owned and complained that he had to start work at 10 a.m. every day. All these years I've been getting up at 4 and 5 in the morning, and this guy's upset about having to be to work at 10? Needless to say, however, Engels rose up in that company and eventually was able to retire comfortably from it, despite he and Marx devoting their lives to denigrating and disparaging capitalism. Marx was known as being intolerant of anyone disagreeing with or trying to refute his own views. Sound familiar when you listen or talk with leftists today? Some observers have contended, Marx would have been shocked at the totalitarian police states that arose embracing principles of Marxism. We're talking about Soviet Union, China, North Korea, to name a few. But I say this is crap. In an editorial Marx wrote on the last day of the publication of a radical newspaper, which he was the editor of, and which was being shut down for advocating anti-government violence at the time, Marx declared that when their time came, Marx and the radicals his paper supported wouldn't hesitate to use terrorism against their enemies. Let's hear more about the movement to push America into totalitarian socialism. Here's an interview by KUSI News, June 2nd, and posted on YouTube, with conservative commentator Dinesh D'Souza discussing current events in D'Souza's new book, The United States of Socialism. Please play soundbite 5.
And filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza has a brand new book out about a new type of socialism pushed by several lawmakers in Congress. And he says we're seeing that type of socialism in the violence on the streets right now. Joining us to talk about that new book, United States of Socialism, is Dinesh D'Souza. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be on the show.
All right, Dinesh, you are seeing something that has emerged for the very first time in society, identity socialism. Tell people what that is. Define that for us.
Identity socialism refers to the strange marriage that we see between classic socialism and identity politics. Now, when socialism first began, it was a class phenomenon. Marx thought of the world as divided into two groups of people, the workers who are exploited and the greedy capitalists who are exploiting them. But today, for the left, socialism isn't just about the class divide. It's also about a race divide and a gender divide and a divide between straights and gays and between legals and illegals. So what's happening is that the socialist left today divides America in many different ways with the goal of creating a kind of coalition of oppressed victims. This is how they hope to get to a political majority.
That's maybe why we're seeing so many people hit the streets pushing a lot of different agendas or connecting with a lot of agendas. You say the left is using the George Floyd injustice to propagate socialist ideas. Explain that.
Well, if you follow the targets of the attack, it's not confined to policemen who use brutality or even policemen in general. You'll see signs spray painted on stores like Capitalist Pig, and small business owners are targeted for attack. So just begin by asking yourself, well, what do they have to do with it? How are they complicit in what happened to George Floyd? And the answer is they're not. So what's happening is that for groups like Antifa, even Black Lives Matter, there are other groups involved like Refuse Fascism and so on. Their agenda is to use racial grievance because they know that the incident generates a lot of emotion. And so if they can tap into that, they can push other things that have nothing to do with the agenda by trying to intimidate people into going along with that program.
So the violence we're seeing on the streets, that's giving us a glimpse into what this modern day socialism is.
My wife is from Venezuela, and in Venezuela, you have a paramilitary group called the Colectivos. They're actually an instrument of the socialist state. They're former criminals, most of them, and they're given cement blocks and bats to go around and beat shopkeepers and beat dissidents into submission. It's a sort of paramilitary wing of socialism, and we're beginning to see that here for the first time in my lifetime. And what disturbs me is that the mainstream of the Democratic Party, which would never have been okay with this in the past, it's hard to imagine Jimmy Carter or Michael Dukakis or Truman or JFK signing on to paramilitary people going around beating people up in the street and looting. This is a new phenomenon, and I think it indicates a nasty turn that our politics have taken.
Yeah, so you're up against mainstream media, social media, basically pop culture, the Democratic National Party to be part of this identity politics. How do you beat that? How do you beat identity socialism?
Its secret weapons are the big megaphones that it controls, the socialist left. Academia, the media and Hollywood. So ordinarily by itself, it wouldn't be that powerful, but it has strong protectors in these camps, not to mention in offices of the mayor of Portland and the mayor of Berkeley, even the mayor of New York City. These are sort of Antifa sympathizers. So how do you defeat it? Well, you have to, first of all, defeat it on the street. This is why I think Trump is calling in the military, because conservatives and Republicans don't have a paramilitary. We can't fight them in the streets with brickbats. We don't have any. So what do? We have to call in the military to say, look, if you guys are going to use force, we're going to have to use greater force. We also have to go after the other weapons of socialism, which is the deep state, the corruption at high levels of government, these police agencies of government, the IRS, the FBI, the CIA, sometimes deployed against political opponents. That's got to stop.
All right, Dinesh D'Souza, finding a way to attract a new generation away from that identity politics. Thanks so much for joining us. I'll put the plug in. You can go to DineshD'Souza.com and go ahead and order that book. Thanks so much again.
My pleasure.
If you've been watching, we are seeing some pushback developing here, and actually it's starting to gain quite a bit of momentum in recent weeks, particularly against this, all this hysteria and the hatred and the rioting and intimidation going on, despite the big push by our pop culture through this with the political left. Let's listen to Dr. Steve Turley's posting on his YouTube channel July 9th, titled "Antifa Terrorists and Black Lives Matter Activists Arrested by Feds as Trump Stomps the Far Left." In this video, Turley applauds the federal government and those local government law enforcement entities which are beginning to crack down on this lawlessness and violence of the left. Play soundbite 6, please.
Dozens of Antifa terrorists and Black Lives Matter activists have been arrested by the feds as President Trump stomps the far left. In this video, we're going to take a look at the latest arrests that are all part of President Trump's crackdown on leftist rioters, how the federal government is standing in the gap left by these feckless Democrat politicians, and how the less propensity towards violence is only guaranteeing Trump's re-election in November. You are not going to want to miss this. All right, gang, let's dive right in here. Again, some amazing developments have been going on in Trump's counteroffensive against the far left that we've been focusing on here. The Department of Justice has announced the arrest of 7 people associated with a terrorist designated Antifa who will now face federal charges for their roles in weekend riots at the main courthouse in Portland. Now, if you're not aware, protesters in Portland outside of the courthouse began launching fireworks directed at police officers as well as the courthouse building. And as officers moved in to disperse the crowd, a number of the rioters began throwing bricks and fireworks, firework mortars at them. And so the whole thing descended into, you know, your typical violence and disorder and chaos that we've been treated to from our nation's Democrat ruined cities. And Portland's certainly no exception to this. And so among the numerous arrests were 7 known Antifa members, all of whom have now been charged with federal crimes. Now, keep in mind, one of the reasons the feds have had to step in here is that the ultra-liberal DA, the district attorney there in Portland, he has a penchant for dropping charges against the woke warriors causing so much havoc and destruction in our cities. And so as a hedge against the pattern of liberal democratic lawmakers selectively abdicating their law enforcement responsibilities, the federal government, under the direction of the Trump administration, has stepped in. They are standing in the gap between the lawless rioters and the feckless left-wing politicians. And now they're arresting and indeed charging Antifa members with federal crimes. All 7 defendants made their first appearance in federal court just the other day on July the 6th and will be tried on a number of federal charges. Now, moving over to Iowa, prosecutors there have charged 2 Black Lives Matter protesters with a rarely used leak charge. That's a charge against those unlawfully sharing classified data with the public. What happened was that 2 BLM activists stole documents from a cop's pockets during a confrontation with the police officer. The document was an intelligence bulletin that included photos of suspects wanted from an earlier Des Moines riot back on June 20th. These BLM activists stole the document and then went on to display it on television during an interview broadcast with a local TV station. Now, why this is so significant is that the charge carries with it a five-year prison sentence. So the federal government is not kidding around anymore. Well, this is the Iowa City government, I should say. They're not Portland. They seem to be taking matters into their own hands and cracking down on these rioters and vandals themselves without the need of the federal government. Moving over to New York, you may have heard about the two radical left-wing lawyers who were arrested for throwing Molotov cocktails at a police patrol car during the riots that broke out in Brooklyn several weeks back. They were indeed arrested, they were caught, and now they are being charged with seven felonies and are indeed facing life in prison. It'd be fascinating to see what their legal background is going to do with this one. It certainly didn't seem to help them from engaging in the most horrific destructive behaviors we've seen here. But I want to take a second and give you just a sense of just how much the mainstream Marxist media has become apologists for this kind of behavior. Look at this from the NPR, the ultra-left National Public Radio. It's a piece on these two lawyers being arraigned on federal charges. Look at what NPR wrote. You ready for this? Federal prosecutors haven't accused Aruj Rahman, 31, or Colin Fernmatis, 32, of harming anyone that night. But they have indirectly cast the two defendants as characters in the favored Trump administration narrative that suggests that last month's violent protests weren't just an eruption of anger from peaceful protesters, but rather the work of dedicated extremists. Last month's violent protests weren't, and I'm quoting here, all right, this is from NPR, they weren't just an eruption of anger from peaceful protesters. Can you make sense of that? Does that have a semblance of intelligibility for you? An eruption of anger from peaceful violent protest. I just want to reflect on the absurdity of the sentence for just a second. Listen again. I don't know if you heard it, but listen here. The so-called reporter actually claimed that these were violent protests. That's a direct quote. Erupting from peaceful protesters. We now have a mainstream media that actually tells us that violent protests arise from peaceful protesters. If this is not the epitome, the very definition of conceptual absurdity, I don't know what is. No wonder no one takes mainstream media seriously anymore. But frankly, there's something even more seditious about this NPR thing here. If you think it through, and critical thinking is obviously not in fashion today among our political and media elite, but if you take a moment to think it through, what we have to get here is that leftist liberals that comprise today's mainstream media, what we like to call the Marxist media here on this channel, these left-wing activists disguised as journalists, are now openly advocating violence. Our ruling class, our class of professional rulers of which the mainstream media is the communication and propaganda wing, they are openly advocating violence. And the key here is that violence is justified if politically correct norms have been violated. What we're getting from our mainstream media, our Marxist media, what they are teaching their dwindling audience that still actually listens to them, is that if politically correct norms have been violated, so we're talking, you know, acts of transgression of, you know, homophobia, transphobia, racism, sexism, whatever it is, if politically correct norms have been violated, then violence in response to such a violation is absolutely justified. This is what we have to understand. Cultural Marxist leftist liberalism is inherently violent. If you or anyone else transgress its norms, you can legitimately be threatened. You could be canceled. You could be deplatformed. You could be censored. Your businesses can be looted and destroyed. Your cities can be burned down. And yes, you certainly can be personally assaulted. This is precisely what Antifa embodies. Antifa is the justified violence of the left. But the beauty of it all is that the Trump administration is having none of it. I mean, this is why the mainstream Marxist media hates him so much, right? Like Tucker Carlson said the other night, they hate him because they cannot control him. They can't intimidate Trump. So they slander him. They mock him. They disparage him, him and those of us who are his supporters. But it's not working. The handcuffs are indeed coming out. The prison sentences, jail times are indeed about to be handed out. And these looters and rioters and vandals are about to find out that there is indeed a silent majority in this nation that loves our country, our culture, our traditions. We love law and order that protects them. And President Trump is showing himself to be a faithful defender of that law and order, a faithfulness that will most certainly be rewarded in November.
I have to disagree that not many people, as Dr. Shirley contends, are still watching mainstream media or still receptive to it. Unfortunately, I believe it's tens of millions of people who are still under its spell. And by mainstream media, let's also include in that social media, pop culture through Hollywood, local news media organizations. There are many channels of directing this inculcation of the left of people. And we have tens of millions of dedicated, brainwashed minions out there of the left who will loyally vote for whatever leftist candidates they can vote for come November. I fervently hope Dr. Turley is right about Trump being reelected, but just reelecting Trump without retaking the House of Representatives with real pro-Trump Republicans and Republicans strengthening their currently tenuous control of the U.S. Senate will not help the president carry out his agenda. And don't forget that we also need conservative electoral victories in state and local races across the country to truly defeat the political left. That's a wrap for another show. Thanks for listening. We'll be here again 2 weeks from today in the same time slot. Have a good evening.